always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider and lead Lakers content creator for Offside. And today on the show, not joined by anybody, riding solo because this was a home game and Raj was at crypto.com arena. But today on the show, we'll be joined by you guys. This was a relatively whatever game. So I don't want to spend too much time on it. So once I run through a few talking points on it, probably going to throw to you guys to answer some of your guys' questions here in the live comment section. So hit me in the chat with whatever questions that you have. Again, hit me with question marks so that I can identify questions while I quickly scroll and am talking here for you guys. The Lakers beat the New Orleans Pelicans 133-121 in a game that saw them up by almost 30. Lead got down to, you know, lower than it probably should have. And then the Lakers eventually were able to take care of business. But overall, kind of what you were hoping to see from the Lakers, especially in the first quarter, the defense slipped the remaining three quarters. But at the end of the day, you're playing against a team that did not have basically any of its key players. You didn't have LeBron James. You didn't have Marcus Smart. And it was one of those games that, like, the Lakers could very easily have played with their food and have kind of traditionally played with their food. And, you know, you get to the fourth quarter and you're like, God, why do these guys have to play down the stretch? And J.J. Redick basically opted to, you know, keep some of those guys in down the stretch. But frankly, you know, at the 5 minute or so mark of the fourth quarter, you kind of knew where this one was going. So I'm not going to call it a good win, not going to call it a bad win. I'm going to call it a win. And what I will call it, and what we all should call it objectively, is the Lakers' seventh straight win. And so we're going to talk about this game. We're going to talk about this streak. I want to talk about Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves and the type of offense those guys are playing together. I actually really liked the game that DeAndre Ayton played in this one. Hopefully he is okay. Apparently banged knees there with Derek Queen towards the end of the game. And then, like I said, we will dive into some of your guys' questions and comments towards the end of the show. So hit me with those. Hit that subscribe button. Hit that like button, hit that share button for that matter. And then in the morning, if you guys are listening to this via podcast, hit that subscribe button wherever it is that you get your podcasts, you know, preferably on Odyssey. But end of the day, I will take any and all subscriptions wherever and however I can get them. I will show feet. I will not show feet. You don't want to see my feet. I played soccer. They are hideous. Yeah, let's go ahead and dive on in. All right, so again, the final score here was 133-121. The Lakers absolutely dominated the first quarter to the tune of 46-27. Then from there, their defense slipped pretty considerably. 30 points they gave up in the second quarter, 35 points they gave up in the third quarter, probably their least serious quarter, easily their least serious quarter of the game. And then in the fourth quarter, they gave up another 29. Now, fortunately for them, they can score pretty easily, too. So they scored 46 in the first quarter, scored 31 in the second quarter, scored 31 again in the third quarter, and then took their foot basically entirely off of the gas in the fourth quarter and still scored 25 points in that one. And, you know, overall, like I said, this felt going in like a trap game. That was one of the points that I made for my instant recap for Offside, was like, once I heard the number of guys who weren't going to be available for the Pelicans, and Zion didn't play in this one, Murray didn't play in this one, Herb Jones, Trey Murphy, those guys didn't play in this one either. Jordan Poole didn't play. That's like, that's quite literally their five best players. And when I heard that those guys weren't playing, and I, you know, obviously we knew that LeBron wasn't going to play, and it was considered doubtful that Marcus Smart was going to play, I just sat there like, oh man, this feels like a trap game. Like, this is, they play tomorrow against a Phoenix team that they are going to take more seriously than this Pelicans team in any situation. And then given the fact that this game was played as shorthanded as the Pelicans played it, you just, once I heard that news, it was just, I rolled my eyes and said, oh, don't do this. And, you know, look, credit to the Lakers. They came out in that first quarter, and I really liked the way that they defended in that first quarter. It stopped after that first quarter, but at the very least, they came out and tried to set a tone in the first, and for the most part, like, played enough good basketball there that they were able to coast to the finish line from there. And that's kind of what you want out of a game like this. So, you know, kind of macro level, I'm going to give the Lakers a little bit of credit here, given that we have seen so often over the last however many years them take this game not seriously at all. And, you know, they, you know, last year, right, they lost that buzzer beater to the Chicago Bulls. And I thought that was kind of the most embarrassing loss of the season, not just because of the way that they lost. It was that, like, Josh Giddey heave at the end of the game, but it was also the fact that the Bulls were just not very good. And as Giddey is shooting the ball, the thought that was running through my mind back then was, they shouldn't even be in this spot in the first place. Like, the basketball gods are going to punish them with a make here. Yep, there's the make. In this one, it was nice that the Lakers came out, took this game at least fairly seriously, and were able to kind of coast from there. On that note, on the note of the way that the Lakers played this game in the first quarter, Luka is wired in a way that does not allow him to see an opponent over there and not want to kill them. And now he's also young enough to be able to execute on those instincts as well. And I think that, like, somebody made this point in my mentions while we were watching this game. And somebody made this point that, like, it feels like that sentiment is kind of making its way through the rest of the Lakers roster. And I actually think there's something to that. And, you know, Luka is leading the NBA in first quarter scoring. And, you know, Pete said this in Friday's show, that he actually asked some people close to the Lakers about this. And he asked, you know, what is the reasoning for playing Rui there? And one of the main reasons that the Lakers are sticking with, or have stuck with, Rui in the starting five when everybody is healthy, is because that allows the court to be open enough for Luka to set the tone by scoring as much as he can, or as much as he wants to, in that first quarter. And, you know, when you have your best player come out and set that kind of a tone offensively, and honestly defensively too in this one, but when you have your best player come out and score to that, in that way, and try to get to the rim and hit those haymaker threes early, that does kind of get everybody else going, because they know eventually the team is going to have to adjust, and they're going to try to take the ball out of Luka's hands, which is what Dallas did right from the tip in the game a couple games ago. But eventually we saw this from New Orleans in this game, where Luka comes out scoring the way that he does, and James Borrego has no choice basically but to eventually put two on the ball on Luka, and then they started also putting two on the ball on Austin, and that opened up the court for everybody else out there. And when Luka comes out and sets that kind of a tone, and those guys get excited thinking that, like, okay, this is eventually going to open up the game for me that way, and the Lakers defend the way that they did, that's how you arrive at a 47-26 first quarter. So would have liked obviously more of that, but, you know, you just don't often see teams beat other teams by 50. And the Lakers just aren't quite there to where they would beat any team by 50. But you take this win for what it was. I like the tone that the Lakers set in that first quarter. And now what they kind of have to figure out moving forward against lesser teams is, how do we set that tone in the first quarter and continue with that tone for as much of the remainder of the game as we possibly can? And that's going to be interesting to watch how that plays out. The next thing I wanted to talk about here, and we'll get into some individual performances over the course of the show too, but I have to start with Luka and Austin. So they both made 9 field goals. Now Austin went 9 of 15, Luka went 9 of 24. Austin was 4 of 7 from 3-point range. Luka was 4 of 12. Luka made 12 of 14 free throws. Austin made 11 of 12 free throws. They combined for 77 points in this one. Luka scored 34, Austin scored 33. And it just felt like every time any basket was needed, even if it wasn't necessarily needed, the Lakers were just basically able to, and again, the Pelicans are not a good defensive team normally, and they certainly aren't going to be a very good defensive team when they don't have their 5 best players. And this game looked a lot like, you know, that poor defensive personnel obviously plays a role in how easily the Lakers were able to generate looks. But I also think it goes back to what we've been talking about a lot lately, this notion that between Austin and between Luka and between LeBron, in no particular order, obviously, but between those three guys, for 48 straight minutes, you have an elite engine on the court, at least one elite offensive engine on the court for all of those minutes. And that basically means that teams cannot take a deep breath. They cannot exhale for any defensive possession. And in this one, you didn't have LeBron, obviously, so it wasn't offensive creation at the highest level that we have seen while LeBron has been back for these last few games. But it was still either Luka or Austin or some combination of those two guys. And eventually, you know, New Orleans just kind of threw their hands up, and I, you know, the Lakers scored 133 in this one, and I thought they missed a ton of wide open 3-pointers. Jake LaRavia's shot is still kind of coming around. He went 2 of 7 from 3-point range. Rui had one of his worst 3-point shooting games of the season. He went 2 of 8 in this one and had a lot of open looks for himself as well. Dalton went in there. He shot 1 of 3 from 3-point range. The Lakers as a team shot 37% from 3-point range, which is a good percentage, but a lot of that is kind of boosted by, you know, Austin went 4 of 7. You have, I guess, Luka's 4 of 12 helps bolster it as well. But to me, I thought that the Lakers, like, sometimes basketball is a weird, dumb sport, but it can be, but you know, there's a such thing as being too open. And yeah, I remember one time I was playing, and I've always been like the thing in basketball that I was always best at was shooting. And I remember one time I was playing, and this one dude just completely bleeped with my brain because he just like wouldn't guard me. And he just left me open. And though, you know, for like a few games in pickup, he just wasn't guarding me, and it like drove me nuts. And I kept shooting these wide open threes. And there was this one dude. So I played it most of my pickup, and specifically like the best pickup games that I played in my life were at Cal State Fullerton, at the rec center there. Well, there was this one dude who walks in, and he happened to be on my team, and I had missed a few of these wide open threes. And he like yells across. He hadn't played with our group of guys very much in the past. And he was like, bro, why do you think he's leaving you open? And everybody, like, I didn't really say anything back to him because I didn't feel like talking shit to my own teammate. But, like, my teammates and some of the other guys in the gym were like, no, this dude normally hits. He's just off. And I just thought that there were some moments here where the Lakers were almost, like, too open. Jake LaRavia was, like, too open, had too much time to think through his jumpers. I thought Rui had a couple of shots like that as well. Gabe Vincent had, you know, everything that he shot basically was basically butt ass naked open. And eventually when the other team just kind of gives up, it like that, I think this is kind of what happened in that third quarter. The Pelicans had basically, you know, they started giving the Lakers all of these open threes, and then they would run out whenever the Lakers would miss those open threes. And it led to this super weird third quarter. I never got the sense that the Lakers were struggling to create anything offensively. It was more that, you know, they got a little lazy, they missed some open jumpers, and then they also played some really poor transition defense, and that allowed the Pelicans to get back into the game to the tune of like cutting a 26 point lead to down to, I think the lowest it got was 11 or 12. And I thought that it was one of those weird games that, you know, the Lakers kind of got in their own heads and finally were able to kind of snap out of it. Shouts to, what's his name? Jeremiah Fears for, kind of poking and prodding Luka. He and Luka like butted heads in that moment. And I thought the Lakers kind of woke up, maybe not as a result of it, but certainly after, that went down. So yeah, it was just a kind of a weird second half, a weird third quarter. Fortunately, the Lakers got their shit together and were able to pull back away from the Pelicans, and the game was never particularly close. But Luka and Austin, I obviously there are always going to be defensive questions when you have a team built around Luka and Austin and their defensive issues. However, you just are not going to see very many teams with offensive ingenuity in the way that the Lakers can boast it when those two guys are healthy, let alone when LeBron is also available. And, you know, am I going to have those questions? And would I like to see some of those questions answered at the trade deadline by bringing in some personnel that makes up for some of those defensive issues? Absolutely. But 29 out of the other 29 teams would beg for, maybe like the only team that I would maybe see saying now we're good on that level of offensive creation, our defense is good enough to handle it anyway, would maybe be OKC. But basically every other team in the NBA would say, you know what, whatever defensive concerns that you have, we'll take those. Give us Luka and Austin and let those guys create offense in the ways that those guys can, let alone also having LeBron James be able to, you know, be available as frequently as he can be available. The type of offense that the Lakers are going to be able to play over the course of the season, especially as they get reps and they learn how to better play with each other, this team offensively has the chance to do some truly incredible things. All right, I want to talk about DeAndre Ayton specifically also before we kind of get into the Q&A portion of the show. Ayton played 27 minutes in this one, went 7 of 9 from the field, 8 of 8 from the free throw line. Love seeing him get to the free throw line that frequently. He scored 22 points, grabbed 12 rebounds, had 4 block shots, and was a plus 14 in the game. The only guy with a higher plus minus than Ayton was Gabe Vincent. And I guess Maxey tied Ayton for plus minus in this one too. But Ayton, this was about as well as I have seen Ayton move defensively. The Pelicans have a ton of slashers and they have a ton of youth and athleticism, and they were trying to get to the rim as quickly or as often as they could. going by guys like Austin, going by guys like Rui, going by guys like Luka. And I thought Ayton did a phenomenal job of either blocking the shot outright or, you know, closing the angle to an extent where whatever shot was attempted, it was not comfortable. So I thought Ayton really, you know, kept the Lakers focused defensively with the way that he was able to patrol the paint. And that was not something that I had on my bingo card coming into the season. I've always thought of him as a really good offensive. He is an extremely talented offensive center, especially in the low post and in the pinch post. He has great touch, nice form on his jumper, all of those things that you would ask for offensively. Obviously, you would maybe like for him to be athletic enough to get higher above the rim, but for the player that he is offensively, he has maxed that out basically. And that was the part of it that I was kind of hoping to get. And we have so far this season. What I didn't necessarily want to get my hopes too high on was Ayton's ability defensively. And when the Suns made the finals, Ayton was really bleeping good defensively. He was rotating all over the paint. He was doing a great job of contesting shots in the key, but in a controlled manner so that, you know, his first jump didn't completely take him out of plays. If he did block shots, and we saw this a little bit tonight, Ayton also does a really good job, for the most part, of keeping the ball in play, and more specifically, keeping the ball in play close to him or to his teammates, which allows the Lakers to get those rebounds and get going in the opposite direction. I was really, really impressed by the defense that Ayton played in this one. And look, Derek Queen has been one of the more underrated stories in the league this year. He shot 4 of 12 from the field and just never really looked all that comfortable there. Ezmisi, like, all of his attempts are always going to be in the paint. He's not a particularly skilled big. He went 1 of 5 from the field. I want to see if I can go here, see if I can get a shot chart on both teams while we're kind of talking here. But yeah, here we go. So Pelicans, all players made, missed. They missed. I'm just counting here in the paint. They missed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. I'm just doing that based off of the shot chart. 25 field goal attempts in the paint that the Pelicans missed outright. That is, you know, and Hayes is responsible for some of this too, but I thought Ayton did a phenomenal job of setting a tone of kind of what the expectation is for centers there. And when Hayes came in and got into the game too, he kind of picked up play at that level. And I thought the Lakers centers in this one, I guess you could include Maxey in this group as well, but I thought the Lakers bigs did a really good job of never allowing New Orleans to be very comfortable with any of their attempts in the paint. And, you know, I thought that went a long way in making sure that New Orleans never really developed any significant offensive momentum.